Okay, so basically the topic of today's discussion will be gaseous dynamical friction, and specifically in presence of radiative feedback. And it will be delivered by Cole and myself. So let's start from the beginning. Basically, dynamical friction from any kind of medium arises for a massive perturber that is moving through some background. That is moving through some background. And basically, as it does so, it gravitationally focuses the surrounding medium so that that medium, which follows this streamlines that are indicated in this cartoon, that medium forms a density wake. And if the perturber is moving at a speed that is close to basically the characteristic speed of the background medium, then this wake will lag behind the perturber, and it will exert basically gravitational force on it, tag it. And so basically the idea is that the object will slow down on the account of this interaction. So that is of great interest for many scenarios. I will focus on massive black holes in my talk mostly, but dynamical friction should in an equivalent way operate also on stellar origin black holes and other massive objects. And for example, in the context of massive black holes and mergers of galaxies, dynamical friction due to both stars and gas is thought to be the principal mechanism that brings the black holes together and allows them to pair up gravitationally and finally form gravitationally bound binary as they sink from scales of about 1 kiloparsec, when basically the two stellar bulges merge to form a single bulge, and all the way down to about 1 parsec, when roughly a gravitationally bound supermassive black hole binary is expected to happen. And depending exactly on the type of the interaction, whether it's just driven by gas or stars, this pairing up for supermassive black hole binaries can take anywhere between millions to billions of years. So at least that's the conventional wisdom, but the result that I wanted to tell you about today is that in presence of radiative feedback, actually the nature of gaseous dynamical friction changes. And not only does gaseous dynamical friction does not operate in presence, or as expected, in presence of radiative feedback, but it actually, in opposition to the classical expectations, it will act to accelerate the black it does so with acceleration magnitude that is comparable to the classical effect, but it has the opposite direction. Yes, Yang-Pei.
There's one recent paper by Yuri Levin.
Yes, by Gruzinov et al. He was the first author, and Yuri Levin was one of the authors. Yes,
exactly.
You're right.
You have overflow coming from black hole and the create a cavity.
That's right.
You were working on that. That's what we're trying to do, understand if the results.
So let me.
He said tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So. Basically, dynamical friction force, I just wanted to show the main ingredients, has this form. It's proportional to mass of the perturber squared, which is right away telling you that more massive perturbers will experience more effective dynamical friction. It's linearly proportional to the density of the background medium, and it's inversely proportional to the velocity, relative velocity between the perturber and the background medium squared. So just to manipulate that equation a little bit. Thank you, Cole. Basically,
a contribution to the discussion.
These are these pieces that you see on the board. If you multiply and divide that expression by the speed of sound, say at infinity, where by infinity I mean gas that is far away and is not affected by the perturber, you can rewrite this expression in terms of this dimensionless parameter I, which is telling you how strong is this dynamical friction force, depending on what type of background medium do you have, what is its geometry extent, and so on. And the Mach number here, which basically tells you about the ratio of the relative speed of the perturber and the background medium with respect to the characteristic speed for that medium, which for the gas will be the speed of sound. And if we are talking about collisionless, say, stellar background, it will actually be the stellar velocity dispersion. So basically, with that in mind, I actually wanted to give chance to Cole, who had a very important question that carries some very interesting intuition about dynamical friction that he can explain before we continue any further. Yes, let's do that.
Yes, you can. Yeah. It's fine.
Okay, so this isn't really on then?
Yeah, it is, but don't worry.
Okay, good. Yeah, so when I heard about this negative dynamical friction and the acceleration of things that from Tamara and Kwangho's paper, my immediate thought was that can't possibly be right because this is somehow creating energy. So let me try to set things up for you by thinking first about standard dynamical friction. So here we have our mass. And let's imagine that the medium this is interacting with has zero temperature because that doesn't play a particular role here. And let's suppose that we are in an inertial reference frame in which this object is at rest initially. And then we just see what happens. Now in this frame, we have things coming by at some large distance and some fixed direction, because again, remember, this is actually moving, but this is what we're seeing in this frame. And if we ask about what's happening with standard dynamical friction, then we can say that we have deflection of these orbits. And you can look at this as some extra mass here, but let's say we think about this just in terms of linear momentum conservation and energy conservation. From the linear momentum conservation standpoint, if the masses of these individual particles are tiny compared to the mass of this thing, then the speed at a large distance and then the speed at the large distance are going to be the same. But this has been deflected.
Yeah, but they'll be decelerated also.
Well, they'll also be decelerated, but that actually goes in the same direction as what I'm going to talk about. So let's say at first they're not changed at all in their speed. But this component of the speed has been changed. Because even if you somehow manage to maintain exactly the same speed at large distance here and here, then the component in this direction has now dropped. And there's a cancellation by symmetry. And so what that tells you is that the linear momentum of the stuff going in this direction has been decreased. And so the only way you can make that up is to make the object move in this direction. And, as you said, Andrew, in reality, because you are going to have a slight deceleration at large distances here, you also conserve energy, no problem at all. So essentially, the linear momentum is conserved by getting the black hole or other object to move in the same direction, so it's like a drag. Energy is conserved, everything is perfectly fine. Great. Now let's turn it around. Suppose that somehow, and we don't know how yet, this is what's going on. So this is the idea that you somehow have acceleration, so the negative dynamical friction. Now, if you try the same thing, it means that because you have this big object has a component of linear momentum going in that direction, this has to be increased in its linear momentum, meaning that these things have to move faster, and this guy, which wasn't moving initially in your frame, is now moving. So suddenly everything has more energy. So looking at this, I'm thinking, wow, this is kind of like what Julian was saying, perpetual motion machine, you create energy. But this actually does, I think, give some insight, because what this tells you is that in a circumstance where either there's no energy injected into the system by any source, or that energy, whatever it may be, doesn't couple to this matter, you cannot have negative dynamical friction. In particular, if these are stars, which have small enough cross-section, effectively, that they don't interact with anything coming off of this guy, it means there is no negative dynamical friction. The thing I would like to know, then, is, well, twofold. One, I think that from the energy standpoint, you can argue that whether you've got some stellar wind here or something produced by accretion, you can have energy, and as long as this is gas and can couple to that energy, it is at least not impossible. You're not violating energy conservation.
Right.
I don't yet fundamentally understand, even in a situation where, for example, you might have a bow shock, I don't quite understand how the momentum conservation goes, but I can kind of generally accept that this must be the case. So that's at least part of it. Now, the other thing to note is that, and this is something that Gruzinov et al. Talk about, they basically do a simple energy argument. They don't do the linear momentum argument. And they argue that in various circumstances, the sort of stuff that Tamar and Kwang Ho have seen is kind of what they expect. But they also note that, of course, this study, appropriately, is starting out in a very simplified way. We are imagining, for example, that the medium that this is going into is a completely uniform medium. And obviously, there are going to be a lot of other things going on. But in addition, the assumption here, in terms of all of this, is that whatever comes out, whether this is accretion energy re-released or it's a stellar wind or something, is absolutely symmetric in the frame of the object. And what Gruzinov et al., among other things, note is that if you go through the different components here, so the component of the Bondi-Hoyle accretion, the actual accretion itself, is going to drag the black hole, normal dynamical friction. But they show that the interaction of the wind or whatever else can be much more substantial than that. It can overwhelm the normal drag from the accretion. But they also indicate that whatever this energy is, if it is asymmetrically emitted, in fact, you know, we can, as an extreme, say it's all going in one direction, that the rocket effect can itself be much more important than the negative dynamical friction and interaction with the bow shock. So this gives you some characteristic values there to say that the principle of the general negative dynamical friction is something that doesn't violate any obvious rules, can be substantial, as tomorrow's actually finding, but the details matter a lot in terms of actually doing simulations. And indeed, this is one of the things Gruzinov et al. Emphasize. They say that they do not consider their kind of toy models where they have a model of the shock and the density and whatever to actually be convincing because of things like the rocket effect, if it exists at all, could be completely dominant, which is another way of saying that even if you have moderate asymmetry in the emission, that could be the most important effect in the system. And so you really do need to do careful work in a variety of ways.
I just realized that we had run a simulation with the radio transfer and energy from the pool. So we were using an SED from the pool, so we were having some ionizing energy, and we were having H2 regions, and the pools were not stopping. But clearly, we were not in that particular setup because the galaxy was moving into its own things. And also, finally, our solution, as Alberto pointed out,
That may matter, depending on the mass of the black hole. I'll mention some scales very soon. So for reasons that Cole outlined, we are today going to focus on cookies, apparently.
Yeah, okay, just one second. You can take
okay,
five
cookie back. Break. Cookie yes. Break for everyone.
So Cole?
Okay, I'll turn it on again.
Oh.
Thanks.
Can you turn it off? Is your microphone off?
No, it's not. I think they turned it on, and I can mute it if you...
No, that's wrong. Don't you have a green light if it's on and red?
So the red light is glowing next to on.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's just how they have it.
I forgot. Time just flew by when I realized it was 3:10. Oh, you guys started at 3?
05. You were not really late. No, you didn't miss a whole lot of excitement.
And you want me to bring some tea, coffee?
No, I have my water, and I'm good on cookies.
So, do you want a cookie?
No, I'm good.
Are you sure?
Yeah, totally. No, please, I don't want to deprive you of your...
Before we last year at some meeting, I said, China is going to kind of blow the numbers on FRBs. Good.
Yeah, which it's doing, I think. So, was it at the 3G meeting?
No, I was at a meeting there, and so it's over 400 already. 12 repeaters. This whole thing is going crazy.
12 repeaters?
One of them is the same one. So it's 3 years later.
One of them is the same since first?
The same one. The giant got the same repeater, the first repeater. They get to see it 3 years later to go bump in the night.
Okay. Are we ready?
We are Alberto-less, but
Alberto-less.
I think it's okay. He will leave the cookie.
You'll leave the cookies.
You have great faith.
At some point, does it mean anything soon?
Well, at some point, the cookies will run out.
Anyways, so basically, the bottom line is that the gas can be affected by radiation in interesting ways, which can change its dynamics, which can affect the black hole. But another reason why gas is interesting is that when present in galaxies, merger galaxies, gas can, in principle, be much more efficient at bringing the two massive black holes together and causing them to pair up. So that's illustrated in this figure here. So what you're looking at is basically force that is normalized to this term here that does not include the dimensionless factor and the Mach number, and versus the Mach number. So the plot is from Ivo Stryker's 99 paper. The solid lines here show you the dynamical friction force in gaseous medium, and the dashed lines show you the same dynamical friction force, but for the stellar background. And in order to compare apples to apples here, basically in this figure, the characteristic speed of sound in the gas is set equal to the stellar velocity dispersion of the stellar background. And basically different lines from top to bottom give you the dynamical friction force of increasingly larger sizes in the background medium. So the thing to note is that around the Mach number of 1, gas's dynamical friction is more efficient by a factor of few, which would translate, obviously, into shorter timescales for massive black holes to sink into the center of the merger galaxy. But in reality, what you see in simulations that actually simulate merger galaxies and massive black holes, that are massive black hole pairs that are sinking in, is that actually when there is enough gas, massive black hole pairing can be tens of times faster in gas-rich galaxies versus gas-poor when there are only stars. So that's due to the dissipationless nature of the gas, which can basically re-emit, re-radiate the energy and basically come back to interact with the massive black holes again and again, whereas stars are scattered and effectively lost. Yeah.
I think so. Here, somewhere you was okay. Yes, you have the density there.
There is.
This is also assuming that gas and stars have the same density.
This is also assuming that they have the stellar the same mass density.
Yes.
Same mass density.
And something that should be noted about the simulations, and it goes in the same direction you're saying, but very often in simulations, you resolve reasonably stellar densities, but not very reasonably gas densities. So it is a well-known fact that most simulations do not reach the densities that you have put in the molecular clouds. This goes in the same direction.
Yeah.
It seems likely that in simulations we're underestimating the effect of dynamic friction. I'm not saying in which sense, just because the gas density is underestimated.
What about observationally?
Fair enough.
Oh, this is the point that observationally we know that gas densities are higher than those that we
can. Yeah. So forget simulations for a second. I mean, that already says that this is an important effect.
Yeah, that it is important, but.
So I'll just mention that.
I'm sorry. What was your question? Is that if the densities are higher, what I was saying is that the gas densities that we saw in simulations are lower than those that you have in observations.
Right.
But the ratio of gas to stellar density can be all over the place in observations.
Yes.
And the same in simulations. So different structures or different type of galaxies will be dominated by one or the other.
Yes.
Okay.
So for the purpose of this talk, I'll be basically focusing on gases' dynamical friction between these two values, between values of 1 and 4. So it's obvious why the value of Mach number 1 is interesting. This is where gases' dynamical friction becomes very important and very effective. And I'll tell you later why is this Mach number of about 4 also an interesting cutoff. But this region kind of encloses the portion of the parameter space where you would expect dynamical friction due to the gas to be the most most effective. Okay, so going back to our example and our cartoon here, I wanted to mention, and we'll put a couple of numbers, order of magnitude, on the blackboard just so that we get a sense of scale, but if you're thinking about 10 to the 6 solar mass black hole that is immersed in some interstellar, intergalactic medium, then the scale of this gas dynamical friction lake is actually about a few parsecs, meaning that this is the region from which gases wake would contribute majority of the force that should supposed to slow down the black hole. So then, number that is useful to write down is basically to calculate the size of the dynamical friction wake. But since we are going to need the speed of sound in that calculation, let me write down what that is first. Gamma, the adiabatic index, Boltzmann constant, temperature of the gas at infinity, over mean atomic weight, mass of the proton. So putting in some numbers into this, one basically obtains that dynamical friction speed of sound is about 10 kilometers per second. If you're considering gas with temperature or average temperature of about 10 to the 4 Kelvin, and assuming that gamma is a factor that is of order 1. And then you can calculate what do you expect the extent of dynamical friction wake to be in this scenario, and really that radius of dynamical friction wake is set by the Bondi radius, by the gravitational influence of the black hole that can hold on to the gas. So dynamical friction wake effectively approximately equal to the Bondi radius, so GmbH divided by the speed of sound squared. So let's see if I'll be able to squeeze this in here. I will do it here, and everyone can see, I think. So basically, if you plug in the numbers, you would get something like 52 parsecs for this temperature, that is 10 to the 4 Kelvin. And this is to the power of minus 1. And since we are thinking about black holes of 10 to the 6 solar mass today, let's plug in that mass as well. So that's basically the scale of the dynamical friction wake. And you know that accreting black holes will also form this nuclear accretion disk that will be source of ionizing radiation. So if the dynamical friction wake forms so close behind the black hole within a few parsecs, then you would certainly expect that wake to be affected by ionizing radiation that is emerging from the innermost part of the accretion flow. In other words, that wake can be heated and can be dispersed depending on the effect of radiation. So this is something that has actually been already signaled from simulations that have considered larger scale, galactic scale simulations. So what I'm showing you here are basically two snapshots from two different simulations carried out by Deborah Shiachki, where she investigated the orbital evolution of a massive black hole that has recoiled from the center of the galaxy due to the emission of gravitational waves. And basically, she studied it in two different scenarios. So this is 20 kiloparsecs on the side. You're looking at density here in these images. And the orbit of the black hole in simulation where black hole accretes but does not exert any feedback is outlined by this dashed line. Nothing much happens. However, in this other simulation where black hole is accreting and exerting thermal feedback on the surrounding medium, she finds that basically it creates this cometary tail and evacuates a lot of gas from it. A similar effect has been seen by Sousa Lima in 2017, and they named it wake evacuation, basically. So they saw that thermal feedback from the black hole will evacuate this cometary region. So then the question becomes, and look at the scales here, right? These are kiloparsecs. And we just talked a moment ago that dynamical friction wake, the gas, from the gas should come from the region that is at most like tens of parsecs. Therefore, the wake will be strongly affected. So now, the name.
What's the dynamical time scale for the density to react and then try to fill up that? Not surprisingly, it's such a long thing.
You mean, yeah. So it could be that this galactic disk was relatively cold. I'm not sure what the temperature is. I would need to go back and look at that paper to be able to tell you.
Okay. How is the feedback implemented? I mean, why does it create such a directional thing?
This?
Because the black hole is directional. Feedback is isotropic in this case.
Yeah, the black hole is moving like this. Because so, as you see in the
oh, like this.
Right. And you have the lamp.
So.
All right. Sorry. No, okay. That's the rotation of the. Is the rotation of the disk? Okay. Sorry.
It's the rotation of the disk, but
yeah,
I'm not sure.
It's evacuating the region, and then the disk is carrying it in the direction.
In 3D, I'm not sure what is, what is the direction in which the black hole is ejected.
Yeah, yeah.
It may not be in X-ray plane.
It's,
so basically, then, what you want to figure out is when is it that this ionized H2 region, which effectively is a deformed Strömgren sphere, is larger than gas wake. Because in these cases, basically, the wake will be obliterated or strongly affected, at least by radiation. So let's set up that estimate and work toward the calculation of the size of the H2 region. So we are asking a question, when is this the case that dynamical friction wake is smaller than the size of the H2 region? And basically, if you use the expression to estimate the size of the Strömgren sphere, it will depend on number of ionizing photon per unit time emitted from your source of radiation. It will depend on the recombination constant alpha rec, because you're basically balancing the number of ionizations with number of recombinations and finding the radius where the two are equal. And then it will depend on the number density of gas at infinity. So what we need here is basically this rate at which ionization photons are produced. And that rate is actually a function of two parameters. It's a function of the bolometric luminosity of the source, because that's what sets the normalization of the spectrum of the object that emits the photons. And it also depends on the spectral index, which is telling you how steep is that spectrum. So it tells you something about the shape of the spectrum of the source. And of course, the bolometric luminosity, if you assume that it's powered by accretion, you would basically write in something like this, where eta is the radiative efficiency, and dot is the accretion rate onto the black hole. So what we need, really, in order to figure out what is the size of the Schrödinger sphere, is we need to figure out what the accretion rate is. And that question, or the answer to that question, will, of course, depend on also on radiative feedback, because radiative feedback will suppress accretion onto the black hole. So in order to learn about that, one may appeal to simulations that study accretion onto massive black holes in presence of radiation. And I'm going to talk about one such simulation. The goal of these simulations is not to figure out what the dynamical friction on the black hole is. Usually what they are after is to see, okay, if black hole is exerting some feedback, can a seed that started with mass of 100 solar masses grow to form a million solar mass black hole given the suppressed accretion rate? So usually those are the questions that these simulations are asking. In this particular case, we're going to discuss this scenario. So stellar origin black hole immersed in 10 to the 4 Kelvin gas and in some background density or number density. So you're looking here at scenarios where the black hole is moving with Mach number 1, 2, and 4. And these top panels are showing you the number density, and the bottom panels are showing the ionization fraction. So red color here follows high number density, and you can see that in this basically snapshot, which is not showing you the steady state, you can see the sound waves kind of expanding from the black hole, but you can see that there is a dense shell that is forming in front of the black hole, so basically forming this bow shock, and that shell is increasing in density, which means that it suppresses more and more the accretion rate. It basically blocks the accretion onto the black hole from that direction. And that ionization is almost complete in this region where we see white color. It's almost 100%. So simulations like this, and this work was carried out by Quanco Park and Massimo Ricotti, show that the density of this shell increases as the Mach number squared, and that basically in all of these scenarios, the accretion rate onto the black hole is suppressed. And it's suppressed roughly to something of an order of 1%, but it has dependence on the Mach number. So let me show you what the dependence is. So basically, this is the expression. If you have a moving black hole that also emits radiation, then there is this suppression factor of about 1%. There is the dependence on the Mach number squared times the Bondi mass accretion rate onto the black hole that you would measure in absence of radiating feedback. And then there is this ratio between the temperatures at infinity, not affected by radiation, and inside of the H2 region. So if you actually measure the mass accretion rate in such simulations as a function of time, you can see that they basically fall for low m, and this ratio, which is less than 1, they basically reach 10 to the minus 4, 10 to the minus 3, of the Bondi accretion rate.
Why is 2 so different from the other 2? Okay, there's no monotonic behavior, they just jump.
So basically, the behavior changes between the scenario, which is Mach number of 0.5, because in that case, you still have very spherically symmetric or close to spherically symmetric setup. And then, as you actually start accelerating the black hole and it acquires Mach number that is larger than 1, then the behavior starts to change monotonically as m squared. Yes?
It would be probably such like a transition, right, between a subsonic and supersonic orbit, right?
It's
so
a
as
transition,
long as your Mach number
exactly.
is less than 1.
It's a transition between subsonic and supersonic.
But this is comparing the accretion rate to the boundary accretion rate.
Yes.
I thought the right-hand side accretion rate you needed, accretion rate that actually go to the black hole, right?
Yes.
But we know if you start from boundary accretion, there's a big question like what is the pressure of the boundary accretion rate that actually go to the black hole.
That's true.
And it's a constant factor for different.
So what these local simulations are doing is basically they don't resolve the nuclear accretion flow, but what they resolve is the boundary radius. So within the boundary radius, they set up a sphere and measure the mass flux.
Okay, so just say everything inside the boundary radius comes to black hole.
Yes, so the assumption is that everything that falls into that sphere that is within the boundary radius goes into the black hole. For whatever it's worth, that's the measurement.
Okay. No, sorry, I don't understand. So could you go to the next slide? Or, no, so here you have an actual m dot.
Yes.
So that's the m dot that is measured on the sink.
That is the m dot that is measured on the sink through some surface,
here, yeah.
Characteristic surface.
So you're not actually assuming that all the mass is within the boundary radius.
So this sphere, that this surface is somewhere within the boundary radius. Whatever enters that surface, falls in. Yes.
Not because if it were at the boundary radius, then there would be an inconsistency.
And then m dot boundary is the boundary accretion rate in that medium, assuming that
no feedback, as you would calculate it analytically.
Okay.
Basically. So that means that basically with this m dot, you now have the ingredient that you needed to calculate the size of the H2 region. So let's do that.
But sorry, I just have one question.
Yes.
Before it looked like the m dot was scaling as the inverse of Mach squared, and now it's directly proportional in your previous slide. Is that it?
I said that, but that was probably a lapsus on my part. The density of the shell
increases
as m squared.
Right, but then it says accretion rate is suppressed, I thought, because the
by the shell, yeah, by the shell in all three in all three cases the accretion rate is suppressed.
Okay.
But,
so that dependence is not the dependence of the suppression of the accretion rate.
Yeah. It's just the density.
Yeah.
Right. So the fact that this is not of the order of magnitude of the boundary accretion rate suggests suppression.
How does this process work? So in front of me, I'm increasing the density, and yet I accrete less. It's because there's flow, strong flow outwards from.
So some gas is deflected, but. There is actually gas that is going to make it through that dense front, and towards the black hole, and will be captured.
But then I would increase the accretion rate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yes, you are.
Oh,
but
okay.
Overall, the fact that you have a barrier suppresses the accretion rate. But then you have the dependence on the Mach number. So basically, if I measured just a simple boundary accretion rate in absence of any radiative feedback, I would get m dot that is on the order of m dot boundary. But because there is radiation involved, suppression of accretion by radiation, you actually decrease that accretion rate down to about 1%. So that's the decrease that I was referring to. But then, in addition to that, there is dependence on the Mach number. Yep?
Was the temperature inside the shell would be higher than the temperature?
So that's right. So depending on the contrast of temperatures, which can be, a factor of 4 or 6, or depending on how exactly, what is the chemical makeup of the gas that you are modeling, then, that would lower this factor here. So it would lower it basically to this value that you see. So after a couple of crossing timescales, when a steady state is reached, basically the accretion rate reaches that level.
And can one not parameterize it, the temperature closer, that temperature depends on the Mach number as well, so it looks like there's a single parameter.
Well, as I said, the temperature inside or outside can be whatever, this temperature can be whatever you want to assume for the background medium.
Sure.
The temperature of the ionized medium will depend on what you assume for the chemical composition. Not only on the Mach number. So, here it's just stated explicitly, but in principle you can reduce further.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a bit confused about how the m dot is going as Mach number to the power of 2, because isn't like a high Mach number going to like induce a high angular momentum? And so, like you said in your previous slide, that it's like actually going to like prevent a high amount of accretion. So how is it like increasing the Mach number? I mean, how is m dot increasing with the Mach number? That is what I'm a bit confused about.
I think that partly this happens because the density of the shell in front of the black hole increases.
Okay.
I don't have a more detailed answer at this point.
Well, would it be reasonable to say, if you think about m dot b, the Bondi rate?
Yeah.
That's typically, if you just write it down normally, that's going to go like b to the minus 3.
That's right.
So if that's relative to a sound speed, that's kind of like a Mach number to the minus 3.
Yes.
So there's some hidden contributions here to the Mach number. So what he's emphasizing is that if you take the standard Bondi rate, how is this modified by the presence of radiation? So it's not
sure
that the accretion actually increases as you get to higher speed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that relative to the standard Bondi rate, the argument is that it's not.
Okay, yeah, that's a good explanation. Thank you.
Sure.
So yeah, basically this term here would depends on 1 over m cubed.
Okay.
That is not explicitly written here.
I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now taking that accretion rate and using it to figure out the bolometric luminosity, using it to figure out what is the number rate of ionizing photons, which we want to use to figure out what is the size of the H2 region, we can estimate the size of the H2 region for a given Mach number to the power of 4/3, and then there is, of course, the density of the background medium.
Like 2/3 or
4/3? 2/3. To the minus 1/3, there is the temperature inside the H2 region, and if you assume that the gas is pure hydrogen, then the ionized gas within the Strongren sphere will have temperature of 4 × 10⁴. And if you have a black hole with mass of 10⁶ solar masses, then you would have this dependence to the factor of 2/3. So now you can calculate what is the ratio of basically dynamical size of the dynamical friction wake to the size of the H2 region, and you can see when are you in this regime where you expect the H2 region to be larger than the dynamical friction wake, that's when you're basically going to obliterate the dynamical friction wake behind the black hole, right? So that's the idea. So question that is then worth asking is, okay, so you have this regime in which you're going to open up the H2 region, the gas wake is going to be destroyed, but is that a universal scenario that applies to all possible cases? And the answer is no, because you cannot just increase the Mach number to infinity and then hope to scale everything by Mach number squared. And there are two reasons why the answer is no. First one is that wake evacuation is actually prevented for fast perturbers. And this is something that I'm illustrating here, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it. The important bit of information here is that the Mach number is supersonic, is close to 3. And what you see here, again, number density on the top, ionization fraction on the bottom, these are different time stamps from the same simulation. You can see that this bow shock starts nice and smooth, starts breaking up, there is accretion onto the black hole, the bow shock recovers, and then it falls apart again, recovers a little bit, falls apart, and so on. So this bow shock goes through some kind of cyclic behavior, but it's unstable.
Right. That's along the symmetry axis of the...
The black hole is moving to your right, so...
Yes. So if this is axis symmetric.
Yeah. So this is axis.
So it's along the coordinate. Right?
Yes, so along the direction of motion.
Yeah, I understand.
So the reason why this is happening, this basically follows from jump conditions for the ionization shock, which also is a shock front. If you actually find formally the solutions for the density contrast ahead and behind the shock, you will find that there is a region or a parameter region of Mach numbers where when the perturber becomes moves with relatively high speed relative to the background medium, you transition from this kind of nice and stable, dense shock front to a rarefied type ionization front. And this transition, in reality, you see as this instability that sets on cyclically for this shock front. And eventually, when Mach number is larger than, say, a few or 4, it depends exactly on the speeds of sound in the ionized region and outside it, the bow shock dissipates and disappears completely, and you are back to the classical Bondi coil Littleton scenario. So that means that wake evacuation cannot really happen beyond that point, so a black hole will be able to reform dynamical or gas wake behind it. Okay? So, yes?
Were these 2D simulations?
These, I think, were 2D, yes.
Has anyone done 3D?
I'm not sure. I'm not aware of any 3D simulations of this type. But they should be done, yeah.
So actually, to follow up on that, the turbulence is different, the cascade directions are different, and so on. But would the instability criterion be different?
Instability to turbulence?
Yeah.
I mean, jump conditions are calculated in 1D.
Right,
and is this essentially a Reynolds number argument in terms of when you have the instability, or is there something different? It's the argument that when you solve the quadratic equation to find the density contrast between matter ahead and behind the shock, there is a piece there that is under the square root.
Oh.
And in order to have solutions, that piece has to be larger than 0. Otherwise, there is no solution. So this regime that you are seeing here falls in that region in between, where basically there is no solution to jump conditions. And this shock front transitions from the dense type front towards rarefied type front. That's like a little bit of terminology. I don't know if it illuminates anything, but basically beyond that point, there's no more bow shock. So, okay. So that happens basically in order to open this H2 region. Let's say Mach number should be less than 4 for the scenario that we're interested in, which is massive black hole and gas of particular density of temperature. There is one more scenario when wake evacuation is prevented. And again, these simulations that study accretion in presence of radiative feedback and growth of black holes in presence of radiative feedback tell us that wake evacuation is also prevented for super Eddington accretors. So the idea here is that spherically symmetric accretion flows that these simulations evolve transition to, according to them, unimpeded hyper-Eddington accretion when the size of the H2 region is smaller than the Bondi radius, or basically this.
I would be careful. No, okay. Because I know that people here may disagree with me, but in most of the simulations, GRHD simulations of supraeddin accretion, you see very strong outflows that are not necessarily spherically symmetric.
Yes.
And I don't think that anything in the paper, at least in the papers, would include this very strong symmetric. Very fast out.
So in some heuristic way, at least Kohei Inayoshi has tried to account for an accretion disk somewhere that forms somewhere close to the black hole, maybe a couple.
Worried about the outflows.
But they are not simulations that Yan Fei have. I mean, they don't have that amount of detail. They basically use the subscript model.
No, my point is that
resolution model.
As far as I know, but you can correct me, in most simulations of super Eddington accretion, you have these very strong non-symmetric outflows.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we can apply this the same approach to see the effect of this and injected energy in a spherically symmetric or to the case.
Agreed.
Have you tried boundary accretion with a velocity?
He needs a box
that
is. Well, that is actually my original question. If you try to resolve the boundary radius, it's impossible to actually resolve the partitional radius all the way to the east coast of
right.
But also, if you ask what degree of asymmetry in velocity across a boundary radius is required to give you an angular momentum bigger than several RGC, the answer.
It's hard enough.
So, you know, click, at the scale of the accretion simulations, everything's a disk.
Yeah.
You'd have to fine-tune very, very precisely to make the flow across the body radius to zero angular momentum.
This is a totally different discussion, but
so that's the difference in point of view. On the body scale, it might be very nicely symmetric. On the black hole accretion scale, angular momentum is going to be important and break the symmetry.
Agree. Agreed.
We like these.
So simulations that don't resolve accretion disks, but measure basically accretion somewhere within the Bondi radius. What they find is basically illustrated in this figure. So this is the black hole mass, and this is density of the surrounding medium at infinity, where it's not affected by the black hole in any way. So the way to think about this figure is, say, if you start with a black hole mass that is of order of 10 to the 5, and you gradually increase the density of the background medium, you will be traveling in this direction. So you, radiation will be effective at suppressing the accretion rate, according to these simulations, until some critical density is reached. And beyond that point, basically, accretion rate will just continue, or accretion will continue unimpeded onto the central black hole. So you will find yourself in this hyper-accretion Eddington regime. So these two papers, or more basically paper by Kohei and Ayoshi, suggest that this transition happens when this Bondi accretion rate that you would measure in absence of any feedback exceeds about 5,000 Eddington accretion rates, okay? Or an equivalent statement about it is that density has to exceed some critical density, critical number density for a black hole of a given mass and the background medium of a given temperature in order to have this accretion rate. So in other words, that is the second criterion that tells you when wake evacuation should be prevented. If you take this at the face value, that basically the H2 region collapses because it cannot hold on to the gravity of the accreting gas any longer. Okay, moving on. So this is basically summarized in these two statements here, where now there is this factor, there is this factor of Mach number being less than 4, basically accounting for the wake evacuation can happen when the perturber is not moving too fast with respect to the background medium. And this is the second condition where basically the black hole enters this hyperaccretion regime, and with an added factor of 1 plus m squared to account for the fact that the density of the front, in front of the shock front, depends on the Mach number squared. Yes?
There are many scales that enter this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And in these criteria that you've written down, I don't think you seem to be there's some other processes involving other dimensionless ratios that would alter these criteria. And let me give you some examples.
Okay.
One of them is that in our galaxy, most of the volume of the interstellar medium is not occupied by cold gas.
Mm-hmm.
It's occupied by gases of 5, 10, 6 Kelvin, and not exact thermal balances.
Okay.
Now, if you try to heat that by photoionization, you don't get anywhere. First of all, it's ionized to begin with, and the temperature that you can sustain by photoionization is lower than temperature already.
Okay.
So one of the other dimensionless ratios that I think would govern the applicability of this model is in fact the ratio between what you might sustain by the stabilization process and the initial the undisturbed temperature of the interstellar medium. And in fact, what you'll have had more, the more likely heating process for actual supermassive black hole accretion is probably something that will produce not definitely non-stellar spectrum. It's not going to be photonization, it's going to be cosmic scattering, something else.
So,
but the second
ratio,
go on. Is the optical depth to absorption across body regions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So,
across.
Yeah.
Across.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, because if the interstellar gas on the scale of Solani radius is optically thin, then the photon just goes straight through and are absorbed and doesn't give you heating, etc.
But isn't this in some sense taken into account when she was talking about the radius of the H2 region of the Schrödinger sphere versus the Bondi radius?
Not exactly, because the radius of the Schrödinger sphere doesn't actually tell you about the neutral fraction. It's sort of there in this ionization parameter.
Right.
time photoionization.
Well, this assumes photoionization, right? Because it depends on the recombination rate.
Exactly.
So number of ionizations.
But medium photoionization is one way you destroy neutrals.
Yes. Okay, fair enough. So that's true, and that those other factors would enter here. What I can tell you about the work that is not mine, but has been done by Kohei Inayoshi, is that he heuristically applies some photon trapping in his models, trying to basically take into account that not all the photons may escape, and how is that going to affect the accretion rate. So that's one effect that is addressed that I didn't mention because it's kind of detailed. In simulations that Kwang-ho and I have carried out, in addition to photoionization, Compton heating is also taken into account. And obviously, the hotter the background medium, the more important is that going to be. But I agree with you that if you take all those into account, that's going to change this criterion here. Dust to gas ratio?
To the degree that the ionizing protons are absorbed as dust grains rather than by neutral hydrocanals.
Yeah.
You change the way the heating works. And now the heat is lost by thermal infrared radiation from the grains.
But yeah, presumably you would exert very strong pressure as well on the dust. Radiation and pressure. So this regime does not deal with dust. It's just basically.
Can I make a comment on your first point about most of the gas being in volume made of hot gas? To me, usually hot gas is also not very dense. So in terms of dynamic friction, would not be very important.
No.
So it's not, it's the opposite. So my point is that these will become important. The dynamic friction from gas will become important when gas is dense. So I think that that's what we should focus on.
If there is a galactic disk, if there is a galactic disk that has relatively low temperature in the midplane, and is not subject to strong star formation, which would basically consume the gas.
My point being that if the black hole is in the head of the galaxy, where you have hot gas, there is a friction from gas.
It's not going to work anyway.
So we get
the hot gas is in the display as well.
Yes, but these are the regions where.
That's right. And so now, with that, actually that calls up to something we were talking about yesterday, which is that real interstellar media are highly clumped.
Yes, but my point is that
the cool, dense regions have scales much smaller than 100 parsecs.
No, that's not the point.
Yeah, exactly. That's
on that I agree.
Yeah.
But I think that in the regions where you have very dense gas, this will be important. I mean, here we're seeing very large, stronger spheres, but even if the sphere is much smaller, it will still damage the region where the
bullet
is moving and
it's
accreting.
So this clearly is a very simple setup. At least we consider the uniform and infinite background medium, which clearly is not realistic, or it's not like real galaxies. But what you're saying is basically reinforces that these types of investigations should be done for more realistic mediums, which are of non-uniform density and different ionization makeup and phases and so on. But in order to understand a process, you have to start somewhere, and usually the simplest setup is the best, right?
Yeah, we didn't get to the.
So,
to the
anyways.
Point why we have this negative.
So, we're getting
conceptually.
There. It's like xenon startle. We're going to get there in an infinite number of steps.
Okay.
Anyways, so. Since these previous simulations that I mentioned have not really looked at dynamical friction, they just looked at the nature of accretion in presence of radiative feedback, we basically set up 2D radiation hydro simulations to see what happens to 10 to the 6 solar mass black hole that is moving through, again, very simple background medium, uniform, and neutral to begin with. And
sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Park is the same park of Ricotti.
It's the
park.
Same Quanfu park of Park and Ricotti, yes.
Okay.
So
he knows the calculations of both papers.
That's true. Here's the expert.
No, sorry, just a quick question here. The resolution of the simulation is?
The resolution varies with radius because it's a polar coordinate system. And it's basically 10 to the minus 2 parsecs at the finest. We're yeah, in the region closest to the black hole. So again, this is a similar setup that you've seen in previous slides. Black hole that is moving with Mach number of 1/2, 1, or 2. This is the density of the gas. And you can see, again, you can see that this dense bow shock forms in this simulation as well. The numbers that we put on the board for the radius on the Strongren sphere are basically roughly corresponding to the size of the Strongren region, several hundreds of parsecs. Dynamical friction wake is obliterated. And in order to calculate what is the acceleration that black hole actually acquires, we integrated acceleration contributed by every fluid element to the black hole. And this is what we got. So this is acceleration in kilometers per year squared as a function of time. And in several, there are several different types of simulations, high resolution, medium resolution, low resolution, just for comparison. But let's look at these in terms of the Mach number. So here is the case of Mach number of 1/2, where depending on resolution, we find that basically the steady state acceleration is consistent with zero, sometimes negative, sometimes positive. It's hard to say. But that's not surprising because this is such a symmetric gas distribution, you don't necessarily expect the black hole to be pulled in any particular direction. In the case of the Mach number of 1, it's this one at the top, and basically there is some acceleration that is reached after 100 or 200 million years, and this is Mach equals 2 simulation for, or simulations, a couple of different simulations.
So, you understand what's going on in the early time, but it seems to be
so
things are not working well?
In early times, basically what happens is that the H2 region is expanding supersonically as it is created by the black hole. So it takes several crossing times for the region to kind of settle down into the steady state and reach some level value of black hole reaches some level value of acceleration. So that's what you're seeing. This oscillation basically is you're seeing.
Yeah, but then I see the oscillations in the high resolution that are not there in the medium and low.
Yeah. So there is a little bit more bounce. We are resolving finer structures. So you're resolving those sound waves a little bit better that are expanding.
Put this in perspective. Suppose that you wrote down the possible dynamical friction for just non-thermally responsive mass, the classical range.
Yes.
How would this compare?
So in this particular case, we're simulating density that I wrote here.
Okay.
But it's a, effectively, it's a parameter.
Just to have an idea.
So this is the comparison. So basically, this is the dynamical friction force normalized, well, I erased that, but by the term that we wrote on the board before. So what we are looking at here is the dimensionless component as a function of the Mach number. Negative value corresponds to the slowdown of the black hole according to the classical description of dynamical friction and mass superturbator without thermal response, and so does this normalization. So this is the Ostriker 99, basically, profile without radiative feedback. Positive values correspond to the speed-up of the black hole.
Sorry, what is it? The time three is the... Is
the just the normalization of this axis.
So just two questions, which is being multiplied?
So 0 minus 1.5 minus 3.
Ah, okay, so the, right.
And
so
then 0.5 times 1.8 to 1.8.
Okay. So they, the plot is equal, but in fact, the classical value is larger bodies or 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these are the data points for different simulations. So basically, the Mach number of 0.5 is what you've seen. Some simulations gave a little bit positive, a little bit negative, but they're consistent with zero acceleration. Mach number one simulation sits at the highest value here. And we had a couple more with Mach number 1.5 and 2 at different resolutions. So these seem to be consistently positive, or to give consistently positive acceleration.
Sorry, the red curve below is an analytical calculation.
And the blue dashed curve above is the analytical calculation flipped
okay.
With the minus sign.
So your example, so it's not a fit to right?
This is not
just
fit.
Flipped. Okay.
As a matter of fact, I was very surprised to see that it correspond at all, and I wouldn't certainly claim
sure,
a fit
no,
of any kind.
Maybe the with the right scaling.
Yeah, flipped
sure,
and rescaled
yeah.
to 60%, so that it kind of matches the points. Well, I think you would need to put a couple more points there before claiming a fit, but just to guide the eye, kind of tells you what the behavior of these simulations is. So we find a substantial acceleration, 60% of the classical value, but of the opposite sign. And that, at least in this simple scenario, it looks like black holes are accelerating. So in conclusion, basically, ionizing radiation from massive black holes may give rise to negative gas dynamical friction for a range of scenarios. And now you can plug in whatever your favorite object is, or mass of the black hole, you can plug it into that criterion to see if it will be affected by radiative feedback. Stellar dynamical friction may operate unaffected, as Cole has pointed out. Yay. But it may have to work harder if the gas is very effective at accelerating the black hole, because not only it has to work to slow down the black hole, it has to work against acceleration by gases dynamical friction. That may basically make timescales longer for black holes to sink into the merged galaxy. It's worth noting that the effect is actually more severe at the low mass end of the black hole spectrum. And black holes with masses less than 10 to the 7 solar masses will therefore have fewer means to reach the centers of merged galaxies if this effect is important. And you can see that by looking at the second criterion. So the second criterion has to be fulfilled in order for wake evacuation to happen. And it is more easily fulfilled if you actually have a lower mass black hole, because it's going to be below
very stupid question, perhaps. Would it saturate? So I get accelerated because I have a high Mach number. Now I'm going to get a higher one, which could be accelerated. And then just keep going to what's the altitude?
It may oscillate.
Well, I guess there
it has to be less than 4.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
You can accelerate the most.
But that's what he is saying. If you accelerate and you're basically black hole has Mach number, achieves a Mach number higher than 4, then you will be outside of this regime.
Causing all black holes should be causing a Mach 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if
in principle, if there was a uniform infinite background medium. So I think that may be important. If low mass black holes are affected, that may have implications for merger rates of LISA sources in principle.
So, in terms of, let's say, applicability of to realistic scenarios, so one thing is, so if you assume a typical 10 to the 4 Kelvin, so the Mach number, the sound speed you wrote there is about 10 kilometers per second.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in generally, if you have a typical, let's say, small galaxy even. That's generally much smaller than the velocity dispersion of the stars, which is in general also the typical velocity of a sinking object in the potential, right? So wouldn't this in most situations be naturally much higher than Mach 4 in that particular gas temperature? So you wouldn't have this situation.
So it would be, or pick the temperature, I mean, of the medium.
Yeah, but calculate
whether this is important or not. But that's what I'm saying. There is a range of scenarios where it would apply. It wouldn't apply to all possible scenarios, and you can figure out whether it does or it doesn't by looking at this criteria.
And in terms of, let's say, next step in complexity, wouldn't it be hard to insert a small gradient in density? So you have your, uniform, and you don't have glass, like that, but instead you just have a small gradient in density, yeah, which is what you would expect if you had an object.
Or
well, probably gradient is an easier thing to simulate.
So you can think of a variety of things,
right,
add to make your medium or environment more realistic, whether it's gas inhomogeneities or gradients, anisotropic outflows from the central object,
right,
as we heard, that's important. Curved black hole trajectories, they're not traveling on linear trajectories, and they may catch up with their own wake, in principle. Other sources of shocks and radiation, perhaps there are supernovae, there are stars in real galaxies, magnetic fields, and so forth and so on. So yes, you can definitely make this more complex or more realistic, and I think it's... it may be worthwhile doing that.
And I can add, even without taking these into account, when we looked at this in the cosmological context, we found that gas is really a destabilizing agent, in the sense that it shocks. I mean, in our case, what we were mostly seeing is effect of supernova feedback, you have clumps. So if you are in a very gas-rich environment, you really cannot predict where your black hole goes.
Yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, it's what I was showing you that.
Yeah.
And even if you are, and even worse, even in conditions where you're dominated by stars, especially high redshift, stellar distribution is also very homogeneous. So black holes will respond to a non-standard dynamical friction. I mean, very locally, you can approximate it as a homogeneous medium, but it should be very, very locally. But overall, you will have a bumpy distribution of everything.
Yeah.
So what we're finding is that dynamical friction time scales based on Chandrasekhar's formula, well, the Chandrasekhar formula is correct. Time scales based on that, where you assume a distribution of gas or stars, tend to be off by orders of magnitude in the right direction that we don't want to see.
I think that's interesting, and I'm aware of that work. I'm aware of also work by Lucio's group that has looked at stochastic scattering, basically of massive black holes, but very massive clouds in galaxies that merge and other massive perturbers. So the result is the same. It takes longer for the black holes to sink to the center, and some are completely ejected, which,
going back to the importance for predictions for population of black holes, I think that it's something that we should take into account. Because if you use semantic models, as we have used in the past 10 years, 15 years, what you normally assume as a merger times or dynamical friction time scale is just the interval of Chandrasekhar formula for an isothermal sphere or an NFW, if you want to define it. I have to admit that I think that some of the predictions, including mine, for the rates of the holes at Hereshit may be worth it.
Yes. Well, to channel Mike Koss, he told me, when I told him about this result, he told me, theorists are just finding ways not to merge black holes.
Or not to grow. We have the same problem with growth.
It's just that we don't understand.
the gas is certainly turning out to be more complicated.
So how much do we trust the simulation at the resolution level?
Enough.
I'm just curious, can you actually compare what you calculated
with
the theoretical formula that the Cousino and the Yugi calculated?
I had no chance. I mean, that paper just came out and I looked at it, but I compared to this theoretical prediction, so.
Okay. Yeah.
Is their theoretical prediction different from Ostreicher's or?
I don't know, because I mean, Yuli once suggested me to simulate what they have in mind, but it looks like you have already did the calculation, so I think it may be interesting to see.
I think it's different types of fit. So Tamar is looking specifically at radio feedback, so the effect of a stronger sphere. If I listened correctly, Yuri was looking mostly at mechanical feedback, so not something that is necessarily just changing the density structure of the system.
In that the two, you say they can have different outcome.
Well, the outcome is the same. You accelerate the cause, but the exact physics is different. So I think that the two should be explored.
But one thing that I didn't understand, and maybe people who have read that paper can explain it to me, is I understand that they consider non-isotropic feedback. And they have a little cartoon of an accretion disk and basically a gas that is flowing in from one side. And then if the feedback is directed along the two wide opening angles above and below the disk, how do you create gas distribution that leads to acceleration?
Yeah, so I actually thought that part of their paper was not really necessary in the sense that.
Creates one feature.
Yeah, it did. So essentially, as part of their proof of principle concept, they do talk about having wind cones that go out sideways, but that ultimately does not particularly play into what is an indication of the magnitude calculation.
Right.
So I think that was a distraction.
Okay. So in principle, it's isotropic.
In fact, it's after that point that they make the point that if you have something that's genuinely not just anisotropic, but asymmetric in a way to produce a rocket effect,
that would
dominate everything.
Right. Yeah. One-sided jet. So that's all I had to say.
Let me ask, that bow shot instability, what extent has that been studied?
Well, it's been studied by Quanho Park and Massimo Ricotti. And it's probably been, I don't know if it's been studied in earlier papers. Those are the most recent simulations. But the results of basically the solution to jump conditions are known. Basically, you can write down what the solution is. So if you write down what the solution is, you will find basically this region where there is no physical solution, which is what I mentioned when the part of solution for the density ratio, density inside the bubble and outside the bubble, there is a part of that equation that is under the square root. When what's under the square root is negative, there is no physical solution to jump conditions. So that's understood in terms of basic mass conservation, momentum conservation, energy conservation. And it's been simulated to some degree, so yeah.
Okay, but it's not understood exactly what starts to grow.
You mean the cyclic behavior of the...
I mean the onset of the instability. You know, if you took some solution for turbine, like what exactly has an exponential runaway?
Yeah, I don't know. That I don't know.
Because it looks a lot like problems in aerospace, with shuttle reentries and hypersonic flight. And they study that stuff like crazy.
Yeah. It's quite possible that there is an exhaustive literature on that. I don't know.
Lewis?
Yeah?
We just decided that by virtue of your current location, you should be the expert on the subject.
Virtue of my current location? This is the chair?
Well, no, not the I mean your long-term affiliation.
Okay. What would I know, supposedly?
What we're looking at is a big curling game.
Big curling game?
Now, what happens in curling? People sweep the ice so the puck changes course. You sweep ahead, you sweep behind, and to the side. And what's going on here? We've all talked about a lot of different devices for changing the background density distribution through which a gravitating mass travels. Part of it is what the gravitating mass does just on its own against a uniform background. But in galaxies, you're often not granted the uniform background. And there are a variety of dynamical processes that can shift matter from in front of the moving mass to behind or the other way around or to the side. And so that's why I think that's the right framework.
I would ask a Canadian.
What's your Canadian?
Curling is something that excites me. I don't know what people are doing there.
We should call the inhomogeneities the sweepers or something.
And then you can fold in all the other stellar processes that are pushing gas around.
But you're doing something with the eyes, I think.
But that's cyclic behavior that you see. I mean, isn't probably the fact that as you move through, so you accumulate mass in this thin shell, and the accretion radius is going down, right? I mean, this is getting low to a point where you cannot really hold that mass anymore. It leaks through. Accretion at that point is higher. You have a higher radiation feedback, and you reform the thing because it looked like a cyclic behavior like that.
I think that is cyclic. It leads to bursts of accretion onto that object, which is interesting by itself. I'm not sure.
If one look at the evolution of the density in the front, you know, shell, and the gravitational pull to the radiation intensity, then we find that.
So it has to something to do with the speed of the neutral gas as it inflows into that, towards that ionized region. And if the speed of the inflowing gas is much larger than the sound speed of the ionized gas, basically this is when this instability happens.
Right.
So, so I suppose the ionized gas within the H2 region has no time to adjust effectively to whatever changes are happening. But that's kind of heuristic, qualitative explanation. All right.
Okay.
4:30.
Good.
Thank you all for sitting through two seminars today.